Welcome along to Game On. We have a very packed show coming your way. We'll discuss all of the weekend's highlights, plus Stephen Ferris and Keane Tracy will reflect on all of the weekend's Six Nations. And yes, we will debate the number 10 position. After a weekend of high-scoring Gaelic football, we'll get the views of Austin O'Malley and Peter Canavan. And Ruby is here as well.
I thought I was here, Marie. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Well done. I was rabbiting away to myself there, slagging Shane Dawson for not working bank holiday Mondays, but you most certainly do. So we have a jam-packed weekend, and if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game on. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Now, you'll be happy to know we have a jam-packed studio here as well. Lots of people giving up their bank holiday Monday to share their weekend sporting highlights because there was plenty of action for people to get stuck into. Lots of debates, high-scoring Gaelic football matches, look like hurling scores. The number 10 position in rugby. There was a bit of racing as well. So Alan Cawley, Austin O'Malley and Keane Tracy are all here with myself and Ruby as well to look back on what was a great weekend of sport. Ruby, the racing did steal the show on Saturday, I have to say now. It was the talk of the town. So much happened. Was that your highlight?
Marie, did cheeky to sound almost surprised.
I was stuck in the traffic actually for a while. We won't go there.
Could steal the show. I mean, like, of course it stole the show. The Dublin Racing Festival was a huge success at the weekend. A massive crowd on Saturday at Leopardstown and some great results. None more so than galloping the Champ in the Irish Gold Cup. And I guess the way the race played out, Marie, to have so many horses in with a shout off the bend and galloping the Champ just in front. And he got a huge reception. And he deserved it. He's a wonderful horse, great performance. Great crowd, great atmosphere. Cawley, you were definitely watching. What did you think?
Glued with Ruby, yeah. When the crowd starts singing ole 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 at the racing, you know something's going well. And it was brilliant moments like that, but brilliant racing the whole way through, Ruby. And as you say, that was probably the icing on the cake, was galloping the Champ's performance. It was absolutely phenomenal. I did text Ruby after the race, said horse of a lifetime, and you know what he responded back?
Go on.
Horse of a generation.
Oh. So Ruby, that's what he is.
Yeah, out of all of the ones, and I know you're not one for looking back on, you obviously had an unbelievable career, as we know, and you're not one for looking back, you're happy with your lot. But if there was one you could ride out of Willie's, would it be him?
Oh, without doubt it'd be him. I mean, I was lucky enough to ride Hurricane Fly, but I don't like comparing generations. I don't think it's overly fair. And I think all that anybody can be, or any horse can be, any athlete in any sport can be, is the best in your division, unless you're a sprinter or an athlete where you can beat the clock and then you become the fastest person ever. But everybody else, be it on a football team or a hurling team, can only be the best of the generation they're playing in. So I think galloping the Champ is the best of his generation, and I think he's an outstanding horse. He's won 3 Paddy Power Irish Gold Cups now. Hopefully he'll go to Cheltenham in a month's time, and when he's 3rd Boodle's Cheltenham Gold Cup, he'll go back to Punchestown at the end of the season. You get to see him. But Alan, to be a great in horse racing, you have to last. You see brilliant performances, but greats last and they run. And this fella is on the way to becoming a great and could be the best horse there's been in Ireland. I don't remember Arkell, so I'm going to say since Arkell.
Wow, that's high praise.
Yeah. Huge.
High
huge
praise coming from you. But it's the truth. It's the longevity. It's the keep coming at him, and he always responds with the answers. In probably the toughest race as well, Ruby, is it? Over 3 miles?
It is. 3 mile chasing is the toughest division. It's the amount of jumps. It's the mileage. It is the toughest division, and he is in the deep end. But there was brilliant racing all over the weekend, from Final Demand winning the Nathaniel Lacey and Partners Novices Hurdle. Hello Neighbour won the Gannon City Recovery and Recycling Services Juvenile Hurdle. You had Majborough, who was outstanding in the Goffs Irish Arkell, and that was all Saturday. And like last year on the Saturday, there was probably the crowd was probably too big. I'm not sure it was the greatest customer experience ever, whereas this year they got it absolutely spot on, and I think everybody that was there will definitely go back. Sunday, of course, you had Ballyburn was brilliant, Copec, the board was outstanding, Solness, and then you had the big deflation.
Yeah, it was
Lossie
a killer.
Fell,
it was
nearly
a killer.
Brought down the Hitman, and the race nearly completely nearly fell apart. But like, it was just from the highs all the way to, it was like you just plugged Leopardstown out. It was incredible. Wow. To stand there, how the place just went silent.
Two others that blew me away, Ruby. You mentioned their Final Demand. I thought was amazing to kick things off. That was the first race on the Saturday. But Copec, the board yesterday, it was absolutely phenomenal.
And we use all sorts of words in racing, like he's a jet, he's an airplane, I probably called him a monster. He's just an incredible racehorse. I mean, the power, the pace, the speed, and the improvement in his jumping from his first run at Christmas to his second run this weekend. He just looks a horse with such a future. It's like spotting a wonder kid at underage football. This lad just, he's amazing. He's only a novice hurdler. Like, he has so far to go to get into open company, to get to the top. You're talking about a teenage sensation, and that's what Kopeck the board is.
That's great. Those are them.
I did see over the Christmas, we were having a joke about it when Willie got awarded the manager of the year, and I says to Ruby then, they had a quiet Christmas, shall we say, in racing terms. And he was, remember the answer I think he gave me was, we're picking our battles, and here they are, the DRF, absolutely.
Oh, they were waiting.
Dominating, and Cheltenham only around the corner as well. It bodes well.
Hang on, we're watching it here now. So you're looking at the GAA results in the weekend. Do you really think Mayo are written off because they got beaten in the league by Galway?
Yeah.
There's lots of people who are like, Austin O'Malley is... Do you know what? Let's just put that question to Austin O'Malley because he's here. Well, Austin, are they?
Speak about waiting in the long grass, but you'd be slightly concerned, I think, maybe given what we see in the weekend, and they definitely will be looking for a couple of guys to come back in and return. I thought Galway were really good, but to lose your first two on the bounce, I know it's league and everybody's adjusting and that, but... probably need a result next weekend, to just try and pick things up. In any sport, when you lose one or two on the bounce, it can suck energy and momentum out of things. And Mayo will be slightly concerned, but
Galway have been good.
Galway have been excellent. They've been excellent. I think there's a lot in it, like, in terms of what they've developed on their bench, and it's night and day in comparison to where they were this time last year, in terms of they were, openly said that they were only drilling of maybe 15 or 20 players in training. But they're back up and they have everybody available, and they look really, really good in terms of what they have.
Austin, I think it's amazing. How long off will those county players get when the season's over?
Very little, I suppose, in terms of the way the things turn around back with their clubs and that, and they get their couple of weeks. But I suppose there's such a, they call it a detraining effect or whatever, and most of them are given, prehab or rehab stuff to be doing. So there's very little downtime now. You're always probably working away at something to keep yourself in good nick. So it's full time, I suppose. And it is obviously a problem in terms of when you think of the longevity of people's career and burnout and that as well. But it's pretty full on.
Well, I'll tell you this. Galloping the Champ, Stateman, Kopeck the Board, all of those horses you watched at the weekend will all have 12 weeks standing in a field when they're finished this season.
Incredible. And I completely agree with it. And I think, it should be that way across the board. Like, the basic principle of any fitness is, in terms of overload, recover, adapt, supercompensate, and come back stronger. And sometimes it's redundant in a lot of fields, but that's brilliant to hear. 12 weeks.
Well, the irony in a field. Ruby, because the phrase was you'd be flogging the horses, flogging the humans. Now we are.
Yeah. It's well, and look, as much science as we have around things, it's still, you have to be aware as a coach that recovery is so key. Not only the physical side of it, but the mental and the emotional side as well. That all that stuff, it needs to be periodized. It's a big, big burn, and you're constantly wearing off the system. I'm glad.
Especially, I feel as well, Marie, in a time when you have managers now calling for the extra sub because how difficult the game is.
Absolutely.
Because this new rules, which is brilliant, and again, we can back it up again this weekend, and we praised it last week, and the scores and all the evidence is there. Absolutely brilliant. It feels like Gaelic football is back. But just on the one where Jim and Gavin, because the game, it's even harder game now for them, isn't it, Austin?
Oh, it is, yeah. If you look at it, and I suppose he's the first one that maybe, and sometimes you often get maybe managers that might fly a kite to avert eyes away from different things. But I think when Jimmy said that in terms of the metrics, and I know he didn't disclose what the numbers were, but it's on the naked eye to see it, you can see the game is a lot more about, big transitional moments, and there's a lot more of them. So definitely your high speed running is up. I'd say your sprint meters are up, and your exposures as well. And that is quite wearing on guys, particularly at the start. Grounds are heavier and that, and case in point, obviously Dublin lost three guys the weekend with hamstring injuries. So that is telling. I would completely agree with Jimmy in terms of the extra sub, but there's something that has always kind of irked me in the game, is that when you can list 26 or so on, I've always thought that they all should be available to you in some way, that would really open up the whole thing again. But I know that they say it gets, it could get messy in terms of running a lot in and out and disjointed. But I've always thought, if you're good enough to make a panel at 26 and you're there on game day, you should be in the mix to get used, not just the five or whatever, you know. But I would definitely advocate for a sixth if it goes that way.
What about pacing then, Austin? Obviously, because I'm horse racing, it's all about pace and you have to be able to finish. If you go flat out from the start, you can't finish the race. Will this start to come into how GAA players play? 70 minutes, only five subs. Fastest thing on the pitch is the ball.
Yeah.
The lads have to run a little bit less and use the ball more.
I think you're spot on, Ruby. I think there's definitely a piece in it where, and it probably comes down to the coaching and the guys that are monitoring load and that, in terms of, it's really scientific now in terms of the amount of data that they're recording real time through their GPS systems, and probably getting that information on to the pitch to guys, that there are thresholds obviously for each player. If it's monitored and managed right, they'll know the thresholds when players are what we call spiking into these kind of red territories, that they could be in danger of an injury or so on. But you're right in terms of pacing, that they're maybe becoming more aware that they need to manage their energy over the 60 minutes a little bit better. And that just means to be maybe cuter in terms of your transitions, that you're not joining in different ones, or that they're rotating it or so on. But it's still, I think, just with the new rules and that, there's so much going on. But it was a really interesting point, I think, by Jimmy Ginson. Yes, it was insightful in terms of, to throw it out there as well.
Okay, we're going to be doing a lot more on the Gaelic football in a while with Peter Canavan as well. Keen Tracy's here too. We didn't actually get your sporting highlights, but we're going to come back to them. Keen, just because we're on that conversation about the different fitness levels and the pacing and starters and finishing, and it is something that came up at the end of the Ireland-England game as well, just the conditioning and the importance of it.
Yeah, and you look at Dan Sheehan, Marie, he hadn't played in just, well, he played, came back for Leinster the week before, but he only did his ACL. I know it's a little bit different, but just over 6 months ago, and look at the performance that he delivered off the bench. But I suppose rugby probably has it down to a fine art over the last couple of years. Well, good few years, really, when you think about it, in terms of the GPS numbers. And it was actually telling at the weekend. I know we're going to get in properly, but you look at the strength of the Ireland bench. But I think it also takes a very good coach to know when to push the right buttons in terms of when to look for certain players off that bench. And that was a massive part of Ireland winning the game, because you look at what England got off their bench and it was nothing like Ireland. So it's hugely important, Marie, in terms of that pace and in the numbers behind the scenes.
Yeah, you could tell all right afterwards the fact that it was planned out so well and it just seemed to work. And I know there's been such a lot of conversations now since the game on Saturday about the bench and what's going to happen for the next game, because, like, traditionally if you come off the bench and you play really well, you expect to be rewarded. But now it's a case with rugby that if you come off the bench and play really well, you keep your spot on the bench, which is probably nearly almost
counterintuitive.
But does that not become more inclusive, back to your point, Dosti, about having 26 on a panel, only X amount playing, for inclusion? So if you go back to where sports begins and back to kids, only 15 can start any game. There has to be subs. Mm-hmm. But if people start to realise more that actually the impact of a substitution is so important, people that are subs don't feel as excluded.
I think you're right, and it's like it definitely, with the way I know from Gaelic games, the way it's gone, and I think the one that kind of brought this to the surface more so was probably Dublin during their tenure, that big run where they put a whole necklace of All-Irelands back to back. And Jim Gavin, I think, was really astute in terms of this always, where he unloaded three or four or five guys always. You know, he had these big impact players like Kevin McManaman and these guys that came into the game. And I think you're talking about longevity as well. Like, if you're releasing these guys in regularly, it's obviously taking the impact, the loading of others as well, but that allows you to consistently over a season, that and over seasons back to back, where you're not burning guys out either. But it's a lot easier sell to a player now that's in a 26 and he's on the bench, that there is a big opportunity here for an impact. And nobody wants to become the impact sub, but it is so important.
Austin, that's the word. Yeah. They're calling them finishers now. But yeah. Ruby, coming from an individual sport, you try and explain this to lads, that you're the lad going to be coming on for 20 minutes and you're not going to start. Honestly, all it breeds is trouble, hassle, arguments, man management issues, all sorts. Nobody wants to be the sub.
I think it's a cultural mindset, though. You look at what South Africa do with their bomb squad, and yeah. I know, look, it's a bit of a term that people, not everyone likes it, but they fully buy into the fact that a lot of their stronger players will finish the game. And look, we saw it at the weekend for Ireland, but I mentioned Dan Sheehan. I think that's a consequence of coming back from an injury.
He'd be starting,
like Jack Conan, you know, is kind of in a similar boat. He's missed a lot of rugby as well, but I don't know if, as Irish people, in your, Austin, your example of the Dubs is interesting. I don't know, generally speaking, if as Irish people we're ready to kind of
embrace
accept
that.
I think people want to be the number one, and that's,
I can tell you they're not.
Stephen Ferris is with us as well. Stephen, I don't know if you've heard that, but we've been chatting about the mindset that you need to be someone that's content to stay on the bench. Oh, we're not. We don't have Stephen yet, so we're going to have to come back to him.
I know what his mindset would have been about sitting on the bench anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to come back. We're going to take a break and we'll come back in just a moment. Game on. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app. Now, welcome back. We are talking all of our weekend sporting highlights and have now started to turn our attention to rugby, because that Ireland-England game was such a big weekend, or such a big moment for so many people. And as a game, Keane Tracy, it really delivered.
It was, Marie. It was great. The Aviva, I think the word that Simon Easterby used was bouncing. And look, it's not always the case with the Aviva. I think the November series was a bit flat. It started on a disappointing note by losing to the All Blacks. And even though Ireland won their three games since then, it just never really felt like it got going. So in terms of opening weekends, you know, there was like a lot of doubts, I think, off the back of how poor they were in November. Andy Farrell was obviously gone. Simon Easterby's first game as interim head coach, and they answered a hell of a lot of questions, Marie. They got a bonus point win over England. So in terms of, you know, starting their title defence and their quest for history to win, become the first team to win three Six Nations in a row, I don't think it could have went much better for Ireland, even allowing for the fact that there's so much scope for improvement, which I think is actually, again, an ideal thing, because I don't think anyone is getting ahead of themselves.
Keane, how do you think everyone was feeling after about 31 or 2 minutes?
I'll tell you how I was feeling anyway, maybe. I thought it was deja vu. I was thinking, and like, even during last week, I was kind of thinking back to 2019, which I know is a long time ago now, but it was the last time that Ireland played England on the opening day of the Six Nations. And I don't know if people remember, but Ireland had come in as Grand Slam champions and Robbie Henshaw was playing full back, and England absolutely ran over Ireland. And it actually took Ireland, I would say, a few years to fully recover. They didn't win another Six Nations title until 23. We know how disastrous the 2019 World Cup. So, Ruby, I had all those kind of negative thoughts in my head. And then the first half, really, until they got the opening try, I was thinking, you know, we're seeing a lot of the same mistakes that we saw in November, just sloppy handling errors, silly penalty concessions, and their attack just didn't look like it was firing. And I was thinking, well, here we go again. England are going to do a job. And this is what I mean by it almost being the perfect weekend, because that was a very difficult test that Ireland came through. And I think the way they thought their way around it was outstanding. And again, I think that is a success of the players, but also the coaching staff. Like I mentioned earlier, the impact they got off the bench. And I thought Simon Easter made a really good point after the match. And I've probably been guilty of this myself in the past, where you almost look at the impact of the bench in isolation, but it's what the guys did before that in terms of softening them up. They, like the England players were out on their feet, I thought, around that hour mark by the time Ireland had looked to the bench. So I think as a whole, from a 1 to 23, and in terms of the coaching staff, without Andy Farrell, it was a very good day at the office.
Plenty of players stood up and were counted when the pressure was on as well. Bundy, Aki, James Lowe, Tadhg Burns always seems to be standing up. You could name a few. Obviously the bench had a huge impact, but a lot of players that started stood up and were counted too.
Yeah, and I think they probably had a bit of a point to prove, Ruby, to themselves more so than anyone, because like I mentioned, they weren't that good really in November in any of the four games. They were slow starting in South Africa in the summer. I know they obviously bounced back in the second test, and I think the shot at history is a massive driving factor. Look, they're not going to really be saying it publicly, but to become the first team to win three Six Nations titles would put this team, you know, obviously out on their own in terms of historic achievements. It would put them down as one of the great teams. And if they were to do it without Andy Farrell, I think they had questions to answer in that regard as well. It was strange seeing when the camera panned Andy Farrell a couple of times in the stand. I mean, it's just such a bizarre situation where your head coach is just sitting below the coach's box and can't really have an influence on it. But I thought a lot of guys, Ruby, you're right. I thought James Lowe was exceptional as well, another guy coming back from injury. I thought, you know, we're so obsessed, and I know we're going to talk about the 10 debate, but you talk about the the drive for competition between players and the two tens are obviously pushing each other. But look at the performance that Ronan Kelleher delivered. Dan Sheehan was outstanding off the bench, but I thought that was one of Ronan Kelleher's best games for Ireland, and it's no coincidence that I think he delivered it when Dan Sheehan was back. The Irish lineout was another thing that had big question marks over it, and it was pretty flawless throughout. So I think all in all, Ruby, I don't think Simon Eastby could be much happier.
Stephen Ferris is with us as well. Stephen, when you look back on that performance, just as a former player yourself, what pleased you most about it?
I think it's the resilience that they showed, a bit of character as well. I think at half time I was up in the stands and I was amongst a number of English fans, and the chat was, oh, you know, there's no Andy Farrell here to give the half time team talk and, you know, get the guys motivated. It's going to be really interesting to see how they come out in that third quarter. And they come out and, you know, just up the tempo. A couple of more passes started to stick. They got in the right, I know they were on the right side for the most part with the referee during the game. But yeah, and they're you know, the players that they've relied on heavily to perform in the big moments over the last 5-6 seasons really did deliver. Like, they really did. And I was super impressed by the whole game, to be honest. I know they might be criticised a little bit for maybe not taking 3 points and squandering a few opportunities in that first half. But I must say, I thoroughly enjoyed the contest. I thought England brought a huge amount of intensity to it as well with the effort that they put in defensively, more so than with the ball. But yeah, it was brilliant, obviously, to get off to a flying start. And it sort of dampened down a few of those fires of, you know, unrest during the Autumn Nations and, you know, everybody not singing off the same page and, you know, just not firing on all cylinders. And it's amazing how quickly, you know, those fires have sort of dampened down a bit.
Cian, everyone is blaming the media really for this number 10 narrative. So while you're here,
exception to that.
While you're here, should we not be pitting them against each other? Should we not be trying to anoint a number 10 and just celebrating that we have these two great players?
Well, we should be celebrating. Yeah, they're both obviously pushing each other, and they're both exceptional young players. And like, it was Sam Prendergast's Six Nations debut. It was a massive day for him. I think you could see early on that there was a few nerves there, but he's not human if there wasn't going to be nerves. There were a couple of errors there, but he really grew into the game, and you could see why Ireland are keen to play him. Some of his passing was absolutely beautiful to watch. And then it was 58 minutes when Jack Crowley comes on, and Sam Prendergast had just kicked Ireland 13-10 in front with a brilliant kick after missing two conversions, one from the touchline and one that he would, I think, say himself that it was a pretty much a gimme, that was a poor miss. And Jack Crowley came on and steered the ship home brilliantly as well. So I think we should celebrate, Marie. I mean, the narrative that it's been driven by the media, look, obviously I'm biased, I'm going to say it's not, because it's been driven by the Ireland coaches who are keen to fast track a 21-year-old who doesn't really have the experience like a Jack Crowley in terms of driving Ireland to the Six Nations last year. But I mean, we should kind of remove ourselves from the social media stuff, which I think has gotten a bit nasty between the two of them. But when you take yourself away from all that, for years, look, and Irish rugby was blessed to have someone like Johnny Sexton, but the reliance on him at the end arguably cost Ireland at the 2023 World Cup. And now all of a sudden you've got Jack Crowley just turned 25, Sam Prendergast is 21. They're going to be around for the next, whatever, 10, 12 years. And it's up to the two of them to fight it out in terms of becoming the number one. But again, I thought it was really encouraging to see that Jack Crowley's confidence wasn't knocked. And if anything, he came on and he delivered a big performance in terms of Ireland getting that bonus point.
Stephen, I thought for a 21-year-old to play the way he had in the first half, knock over that penalty, play that pass to Bundiaki, I thought he stood up and became a man at the weekend.
Yeah, so did I. And it's funny when you know trail through the social media and you maybe click on a few comments that have been made. You know, usually somebody that's having a go at Sam Prendergast is usually from Munster and vice versa. Do you know what I mean? And it's a battle of the provinces, that's for sure. But honestly, Ruby, being in the stands and witnessing how easily Sam Prendergast throws a 30-yard pass off both hands right into the bread basket, just a flick of the wrist, no wind-up needed. You know, every second is used to his advantage when he has the ball in his hands. I thought he maybe could have attacked the line a little bit more, but it's his first start in the Six Nations game, and I thought he for the most part, was very, very good. Just needs to maybe clean up a bit of the kicking off the kicking tee. But, you know, for your first game, that's a pretty good standard to set.
Stephen, before the break, we were chatting about the fact that the bench players are now becoming very much the bench players and their finishers. From a playing perspective, if you're someone that's on the bench, are you trying to get that starting position? Or are you happy enough to come on at a designated time almost?
Yeah, I know Jack Conan made a couple of comments after the game about, you know, he would be happy to carry the water. I certainly wouldn't be happy to carry the water, I can assure you. You want to be a part of it. You want to be starting. You want to be, from the minute one, making an impact in the game. And I think Jack Conan, what more does he have to do, like, to get a start for Ireland? I know there's this question, and, you know, because neither him nor Doris have played brilliantly any time they've worn the sixth jersey. But I think you just got to get your best players on the pitch. Ryan Baird didn't do a whole lot wrong. He had a good moment where he went down the touchline to set Ireland up in a good position. But I think Jack just has more key moments in games, and he was absolutely superb. I actually expected the English bench to make more of an impact with Chandler Cunningham-South and Tom Willis, but they didn't really. And if anything, I think it was Chandler Cunningham-South gave away a stupid penalty and led Ireland off the hook. So, yeah, really impressed by the bench. I know we have a couple of bodies to come back in as well, hopefully over the next couple of weeks. So that was a real positive.
It was a real positive. Obviously, Scotland got off to a flying start, and they are our next opponents to beat Italy at the weekend. Keane, I always think Ireland are better than Scotland. They are, aren't they?
Well, the recent results would certainly suggest that. Like, Ireland are Scotland's bogey team, Ruby, and they're not shy in basically saying it. Hugh Jones, I think it was, who scored a hat-trick at the weekend in the Italy game, had come out afterwards and said that this is the one that they want, basically. But they say that every year without being able to back it up, really. So it's definitely a banana skin. That said, it's going to be on a Sunday at Murrayfield this weekend, but Scotland are missing a couple of key guys. I think once you saw that Sione Tupilato was out of the Six Nations, I just think pound for pound, apart from Anton Dupont, I don't think there's many players or countries who could afford to lose a player that good. And I think he significantly lessens their chances going against Ireland this weekend. I think listening to the Scottish media, there's talks that they might bring in Tom Jordan for Stafford McDowell at 12 instead of him, which would give them more of a playmaking option. But I think every time Ireland plays Scotland, Ruby, particularly you look, go back to the World Cup in 2023 as well, it's the physicality of the pack, and Ireland generally have Scotland's number in that regard. So I'd be surprised, I might be eating my words next week, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't more the same this weekend, with the pack being the difference.
Stephen, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I'm just like skipping through the results. Our game might come back to me, but have Ireland won the last 10 games on the bounce against Scotland?
Spot on.
Yeah, so it's hard to look past them, isn't it? And I think Scotland did look vulnerable at times against Italy. It just seems to be a lack of concentration with Scotland. We know that they have, you know, quality players. Dion van der Merwe, just anytime he touches the ball, he just looks like a sprinter, and he's going to beat anybody on the outside. He's so, so dangerous. But I think Tupilato is a huge loss. And Tom Jordan, just a little glimpse of what he can bring in the last 20 minutes with that last try that he created. So, yeah, they're going to be up for this. They are going to be absolutely ready to run through brick walls come Sunday afternoon. And I'm going to be over there. I'll be with the RTE panel. So I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully they live up to the hype that it's going to have all during the week.
Tough life you lead a weekend in Edinburgh, Stephen Ferris. But Keane, outside of whatever's forced upon the Irish selection policy, can you see the same 23?
Yeah, I think so, Ruby. Purely because the plan that they picked for England worked so well at the weekend. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the impact of the bench, but, you know, it's hard to change that a winning formula, even if, you know, Dan Sheehan and Jack Conan, I think, would certainly merit a start. But I'd be surprised. Obviously, Finlay Beelan was the big injury doubt. They're hopeful that he'll be fit, I believe. But if he doesn't make it, then you're going to have Tom Clarkson making his first start for Ireland, and possibly Jack Ainger then on the bench, who's never played for Ireland. So if that was to come to pass, I think that's an area where Scotland would certainly look to get at them. But you'd still back, I think, Ireland to withstand, I think, that Scottish scrum. If it was France, it might be a different story.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to be England now going into France, but anyway, that's a conversation for another day. Keane and Stephen, thank you so much. We're going to take a very quick break, but we'll be going through all of the weekend's Gaelic football with Pieran Canavan and Austin O'Malley after these.
Game on. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Now, welcome back. Austin O'Malley there has big plans to check in with Jim Gavin about the Gaelic football rules, Austin, is it?
Well, I was just going to advocate Alan Cawley there to the FRC. He's been shouting about the game for long enough and it needs change. And look, I'd back you. I mean, you know, you have a deep insight.
Austin, I've been highly critical of GAA football for the last 3-4 years. It's been on its knees. All of a sudden, a few rule changes and look at the game, it's back.
It's back. It's revelation. Huh? Renaissance in Gaelic football. We'll take that on a bank holiday.
Yeah, look, it was great at the weekend. And look, when you get all these high scoring games, people are excited about it. I was trying to do the maths as I was going along, which I never usually have to do in Gaelic football. But how and ever, for you though, when you were watching it, like, and especially I suppose that, look, Kerry Derry game and all the goals and so exciting. Do you think though that people are going to start figuring things out, or like is it an early season almost coincident that things are so good? Are we going to be in July and it'll still be all these great scores?
I think so, and I think even looking at some of the nuances of, like, even in the, you know, spot something obviously in the Galway game, it was highlighted last night as well, obviously on the Sunday game, in terms of the throw in and Shane Walsh positioning himself out wide. These are little things where coaches now and players are beginning to, you know the system and finding ways to work around it and make it to work to their advantage. And I think that will be, and like, we're getting these high scores at this current sort of juncture of the season where grounds are still heavy, and you know, when the thing kicks on and you're thinking of maybe July, August, when the ground is a lot better and ground speeds are up for players and the ball will be moved that little bit quicker, I think it's really exciting. I think that was a brilliant game, the Derry-Kerry game. I thought it was so much in it, in terms of when you think about just the skill sets and the artistry of the games. We had unbelievable high fetching with great scores, big transitional moments and so on. And even that one that Conor Glass got up and hung, that hang time where he plucked it out of the air. I know he's a bit of an AFL background, but we're seeing a lot more dominance in the air from teams in that. And I think it's going to grow week on week. And I think by the time Championship comes around, I think everybody will have kind of cleaned up what they're about. And I think it should be a really, really good visible.
Austin, I must say I love the two pointers from outside the arc. I know it's extra scores, but it's putting pressure on the opposition to go and chase scores.
It really is, yeah. And I suppose of note during the weekend, even Galway had 7 2-pointers, which was huge. And again, it's going back, like, you'd love to be a forward player now, because it's tailor made for, you know, the real the artists within the game, the good kickers. And we've seen Killian O'Coran and Shane Walsh and Ethan Rafferty, who got the start on the weekend, I'd say more so given because of the shoot from outside the arc. He looked so nonchalant. He pinched upfield and he hit 2 or 3. So it is. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And the only side of it is, I suppose, just it's been strange watching it the last 2 weeks. You know, you're looking at scores coming into half time, and last week we had, I think, down at 114, and this week again we had Armagh hitting for the break at 140-50. So there's a little bit you're just thinking, gee, that's really high for 30 minutes or 35 minutes. But It's brilliant, and it's great for open forwards, and just the fact that 3v3 as well is creating more space. And there was one, you know, you talk about sporting highlights of the weekend, I thought Oisín Conaty's pass to Rory Grugan for the Andrew Murnan goal, it was something that you wouldn't have seen with a congested and a packed defence on a transitional moment, where now the space was there to play that type of pass inside. And it was just lovely to see those kind of things coming back.
Pieter Canavan is with us as well. Pieter, we're a couple of weeks in now, have your views altered any bit?
Not at all. I would agree with a lot of things that Austin has said there, especially the point about, you know, the innovative coaches. The new rules are a dream for innovative coaches and a nightmare for those coaches with intent on trying to spoil a game. And, you know, in previous years, the spoilers, yeah, it was easy for them. It was easy for a manager, easy for a coach to set a team up whereby you spoil the game, become totally defensive, give up kickouts, and it's a dreadful game to watch. Now it's impossible to do that. It's very hard to try and slow the game up. Even if you're trying to commit a foul, you can't stand in front of the ball. The tap and go means the ball is moving much quicker. So the net result has been a much better game to watch. Austin picked out a moment from Oisín Conaty. There was a spell in the Derry and Kerry game about 10 or 15 minutes into it whereby Kerry had possession in their full back line. Derry had pushed up. They couldn't pass the ball to the goalkeeper, so they were put under serious pressure, and it looked as if they were going to turn the ball over two or three occasions. They eventually managed to get it out to the middle of the pitch. They were able to look up and kick it in because there was space in there. There's three on three. Killian Splann ended up getting the ball inside, one on one again with his defender, managed to get past it, but just kicked it wide. But that minute, that passage of play, to me, summed up the way hopefully the game is going to go. It's going to be high pressure, it's going to be action packed, and there's going to be an opportunity for inside forwards to shine.
What about the kick out, Peter? Because it just, from watching over the weekend, it feels like no one's really figured out what to do with it. We're just kind of seeing a lot of the congestion around the middle. And look, at times it's absolutely brilliant to see the big men in the middle trying to get the ball. But there's all this space out at either side and nobody seems to have figured out how to use it yet. What way do you see that evolving?
Yeah, well, I do think it's very severe on goalkeepers, the fact that they have to kick it beyond the 40 metre arc. And the reason to say that, even, you know, if you take that rule out of it, it's still a high risk hitting the ball short because you can't pass the ball back. The goalkeeper can't receive the ball in his own half. So you're putting a corner back if you decide to hit it short under serious pressure. So the reason why so many kickouts are being lumped out, it's virtually impossible if teams really push up. It's virtually impossible for a goalkeeper, and I don't care how good you are. And Niall Morgan, for example, is one of the best exponents of kicking the ball out. He only managed to win, what, 6 out of 15 in the first half against Armagh because it's too risky to try and hit it short. There's very little pockets for you to do that. So you play safe and you belt it out the middle, and from there it's 50-50.
One other observation for the weekend as well was just the fact that goals are 3 points and two-pointers are two-pointers. So it doesn't feel like a goal is as significant as it was before, because you get a goal and then someone gets a two-pointer and it's like the gap isn't there. Do you think they should be worth a little bit more? I know we're tinkering with rules all over the place, but what do you think, Peter?
We daren't include another one at this stage.
Exactly.
But I do agree with it. I was a fan of the 4-point rule at the start for that reason. I think, you know, there was a number of games. I think there was only there wasn't that many goals as you would expect, but a lot of points. Galway, 26 points. Mayo, 16 points. Donegal, 20 points. Dublin, 16 points. Throne, 19 points. No goals. What was 5 teams there? And because the attraction of kicking it from distance. So, yep, to try and encourage that. And the other point to back that one up is the amount of advanced marks that we've had in the first two rounds has been very few. And I think if you had a greater incentive to kick it in, i.e. 4 points for a goal, you might see more long passes played in.
Or, Austin, if you looked at it the other way, should the frees from outside the arc be worth two, or should just the ones from open play be worth two? Because obviously kicking the ball on their own is a greater skill.
I have to agree with you, Ruby, and I think I made that point maybe last week, that I do feel that the free from outside the arc, the dead, like obviously a dead ball strike or out of the hand given two... At the start, when I seen that one first, I thought I'd much prefer that it was a strike from open play. And as you said there, on the run, it's a tougher skill to execute. We've seen a number of really good ones yesterday. And the other one that just I'm not totally gone on either is the idea of move. You know, that one that you have the 21 yard free, you can move it back outside and have a go. That's and it's two again. But I definitely think the one on the run from outside the arc. I'd much prefer if that was just the two.
So, Peter, we've been so curious about who's going to be able to adapt to the new rules best, and it was just some really good performances over the weekend. That's nearly hard to pinpoint any team, and everyone was really enjoying watching the football. But for you, when you're looking at what you saw this weekend and thinking about what's going to happen later on in the season, who do you think is getting to grips with the new rules the best? And who, like when you look at the, you know, the need for the big men in the middle, the kickers of the ball, all that, who do you think is the best personnel?
Well, the team that's sitting top of the division at the minute, Marie, are there for a reason, Galway. Why? Because they've got big men out around the middle, and they've a few big men to come back into that panel yet too. So if the goalkeeper, which all goalkeepers are doing, are hitting it out long, then the big men, it's going to be a massive advantage to that county. and Galway have it. And the second point that you mentioned, if you have got a lot of kickers who can kick the ball from distance, who can score from distance, then you're putting your team in a really strong position. And likewise, as we witnessed yesterday, there was no team kicked more two-pointers than Galway. So that's going to be a massive asset to have those type of players. So they're not there by chance. And as the season progresses, you know, we have Damien Comer coming back in, John Daly. They're going to be very well placed.
Austin, what did you make of Dublin?
Yeah, look, like looking at what they have, you know, sent out, like it's largely experimental. Even looking at their keeper Gavin, you know, there that has come in, Greg McEnany, Young McGuinness, Killian Murphy. It's very experimental, and I thought it showed for you know at different stages in the Donegal game where their defensive set, they were Donegal punched a lot of holes in them. Now Donegal left, I thought, a lot behind them in that first half as well, but just the solidity and the cohesion that you would have always noted Dublin for in terms of that defense. Of getting their numbers back and their spacing, and I thought they were porous from that perspective. And obviously, look, we still know what they have to come back in on the other side of it as well. But
no McFitts though.
No McFitts. Yeah. This week, it's Desi has obviously said that there's a high probability that he won't come back. So obviously, and you take Brian Fintan out of it, you take Paul Mannion, Jack McCaffrey et al. That they're big personalities to replace, and there's a lot of quality gone and a lot of football intelligence as well.
Leadership.
Yeah, I know it's a word we come back to an awful lot, but it's huge. And leadership and reps and guys that have done it at that level. And I'm always saying, you know, you're, for a better want of a better word, your football IP, like, that goes out the door when these guys go, in terms of game plans that have been bedded in and repped out. And they're only, like, I'm always saying about game plans, it's only nuances that throw it out. A guy is stepped too far here, or a guy, you know, a little bit drops off too, you know, too much. It can affect all that. And you only get that sort of crystallization of a game plan when you get a collection of individuals that are repping it continuously together. And so taking all that out, and then that's the challenge obviously for Desi at the moment, is to get those other younger guys up to speed. They still have a lot of quality around, but they're hard gaps to fill.
Peter, I'm going to assume you were in the Athletic ground, so what did you make of Armagh and Tyrone?
Yeah, very impressed with Armagh, maybe first of all. I said before the Galway game that a funny feeling that Armagh might have one eye on Galway and two eyes on Tyrone when it comes to the second round of the league.
And every other eye.
And I think that was very evident, because against Galway there was a lack of motivation, maybe it's a bit too strong, but they weren't as up for it, and they lacked discipline towards the end that a key man sent off, and they played very unlike a typical Armagh side this past year too, whereas this time round they hit the blocks running, ferocious speed, ferocious tackling, and they simply blew Tyrone away. You can argue that Tyrone weren't up to the speed of the game and whatnot, but it was clearly a gulf in class and a tough lesson for Tyrone at the minute. Second half, they did redeem themselves from a Tyrone point of view, and that they did throw everyone at Armagh, but they just gave themselves too much to do. So going in that form, with a few men, key men to come back into, Armagh are moving well, and they're going to be a tough nut to crack later on in the summer.
Yeah, they really will. And Peter, we asked Austin a little bit earlier on as well about how worried Mayo will be. I know it's very early in the year and they're missing quite a lot of players, but it's still a lot to get to grips with when you look at maybe how advanced other teams are in dealing with how the game is now. What were your thoughts on them?
Well, in fairness to Mayo, and I would put them in the same boat, you know, the way Austin has described Dublin. Of the eight teams in Division 1, I would say Dublin and Mayo are the most depleted or trying out a lot of younger players. And it doesn't, you know, it's not that easy. When you look at the teams and the competition in Division 1, every single game is going to be hard won. So they've played well in spells, but they appear to lack that leadership and a wee bit of cohesion at the minute. But look, once they get more of their established players back, you know, I'm sure that will turn for them. And, you know, they'll not be remembered for how they've performed in the league. And in previous years, may have done very well in the league and poorly in the championship. So if they come in under the radar, I think Kevin McStay might be happy enough with that. and it's all about the Connacht Championship from a Mayo point of view.
And just one final thing, Peter, there's a lot of calls for extra substitutions, and also even today Brian Lacey has said that the games should be cut to 60 minutes. Any thoughts on both of those things?
Definitely not the 60 minutes. I think 70 for championship is suitable, appropriate, and the more entertainment we can get, the better. You wouldn't want Derry and Kerry to finish after 60 minutes yesterday. But the point about the extra sub, 100%. I think already, and it's first weekend in February, and we've seen the pace that the game has been played at the minute. So be it two extra subs, I would have no problem with. Possibly interchange subs as well that can come on and off. Maybe very hard to administer, and we've a lot to deal with at the minute. So upping it to an extra sub, without a doubt, I think that's a no-brainer.
Okay, Peter Canavan, thank you so much for joining us. Austin Mali, you too as well. We're going to take another very quick break, but do stay with us. We'll be back talking Premier League and Evan Ferguson with Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly.
Game on. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Now, welcome back. We're turning our attention to the Premier League, all of the weekend's action, and of course the news that Evan Ferguson has gone on loan to West Ham. A lot of speculation about where he'd end up. There was clubs interested all the way from Germany to Chelsea, but it is West Ham, and we will be seeing him there very, very shortly. Alan Cawley, the right move for him, do you think?
Yeah, I think so, Marie, especially the fact that Graham Potter is in charge now. A man who he knows very well from his Brighton time, and also the opportunity maybe to make it permanent. But I think it's so important for Evan just to get minutes and time. They're struggling at the moment for a centre forward. If you think back to West Ham last week in the game against Villa, Paquetá played centre forward and he's a midfielder because Antonio is out injured. So it seems like Antonio will be out for another little while and Evan will get opportunities and get chances. But it's just so important, really, that he just gets minutes into him. And I think I'm glad for him in one sense that the hype has kind of died down a little bit as well, because I don't think that was helping. There was a lot of hype around Evan when he burst on the scene, as there is for a lot of young lads. And I don't think that helps them. So I think it's good that the hype has died down a little bit, and it's just so important. And I've always been impressed with Graham Potter, not just as a manager, but how he handles individuals as well. And he will look after Evan, and I'm sure he will take care of him, certainly in terms of his minutes or whatever the future holds for him. So I think it's absolutely the right move.
Stephen Kelly is with us as well. Stephen, the hype has died down, but has the pressure piled on a little bit because things didn't really work out the way he wanted in Brighton? Now he's got another Premier League club. He has till June. There'll be a lot of eyeballs on him as well. Or do you think that he'll be looking at it like that?
I don't think he'd be looking like that. I just think he's thinking fresh starts, opportunities come in. And as Alan said before, I think they're missing that central key player, and Falkirk has been out a bit as well. And Tony's going to be out. Bowen, who sometimes operates, he's still out injured. So they're looking for a central player, but they do have attacking midfielders that you can play in and feed him, which will suit Evan's game. So, and then going into a manager that already knows him. So it's an opportunity just to get minutes in your legs, play consecutively, get up to playing two or three games in a row, 90 minutes if he stays fit. And it's going to be a benefit for us regardless. If the goals come or not, I think it's just getting him on the pitch and getting minutes is hugely important for Evan, especially he's still young, he's still only developing. And I think we don't forget that he started off so quickly. And you expect that trajectory to keep going. Sometimes you get setbacks, but it's all about the mentality and how you can deal with it. I think Evan seems like the type of kid that he can handle it.
Al, where do we start for the weekend? Woeful United, brilliant Arsenal. But what about Forest? Back from getting beat 5-0 to winning 7-0 against Brighton.
No, Ruby, hold on a minute now. You're all for Forest, and that's fair enough, right? But there's only one place to start this week, and that's Arsenal, because you're always giving me grief about my prediction that
they'll win the league.
They're in the mix. They are in the mix.
They're still not going to win the league.
They're in the mix, Ruby. They're very much in the mix. And whilst it remains 6 points, and I think another one of my highlights, I never got to it earlier on, another one of my highlights, and Liverpool have to play them next week, is the job that David Moyes has done since going into Everton. That's three wins on the bounce now. So that's all of a sudden become a very difficult game for Liverpool. And whilst it remains a at 6 points, I still give Arsenal a really, really good opportunity. Why they haven't bought a centre forward is beyond me, but in terms of everything else, Arsenal have the lot. They're unbeaten in 14. They've drawn 5 out of that 14, and that's kind of obviously hasn't helped because they were 2-0 up against Villa a couple of weeks ago. They drew 1-0 against Everton in all as well, but they're still very much on the right path. Just the only problem for them is that Liverpool have obviously been brilliant, but I don't think Liverpool will maintain the form what we've seen so far right till the end of the season. There has to be some sort of fall off, even for it's a week, even for it's a couple of weeks to drop a couple of points. I still think Arsenal are in the mix, and it was a great performance yesterday.
Stephen, a little bit of perspective on this now. City gave them two, then Haaland equalised. They got the third one all right, and then it was all on the break. Like, so I mean, put context on it now.
I think context as well. It's the place City are in as well. I don't think if this is not City last year, they're going for the title. This City are just struggling to get to Champions League place, which I think they'll get in the end. But it's not what they have been and not what they were. And Arsenal, they put them to the sword. Good clinical finishes in the end, and I think it was some great goals actually. But I'm still not convinced of Arsenal. Maybe that's just the Spurs side of me just can't let them feel like they're going to win it. But I think Liverpool are too strong. Liverpool win that game in hand, it's back to 9 points. And I know they have to play each other, but I still think that, like I said before, I think we'll come back to haunt them.
Let's move on to Manchester United. And I guess particularly Marcus Rashford, Alan, and he's saying himself, like he's moving to Villa, that it's the constant ambition that is driving him towards... that attracted him to Aston Villa. Give us a prediction. Is he going to do well there, do you think?
That's PR speak, Marie. It's absolute nonsense. If you can't get yourself up for playing for the biggest club in the world, why would you be excited about going to Aston Villa? So he has serious problems, Rashford. I know it's a fresh move for him and he needed to get out, but I would seriously question his attitude, his commitment, his manager's questioning as well. And when you look, contrast that, Ruby spoke earlier about what it takes to be a grey horse and galloping Deschamps and doing it over longevity. You can't contrast Rashford to Salah, who was absolutely unbelievable on Saturday. It's his fifth year, Salah, that he's hit over 20 goals. He scored his 300th European goal at the weekend. He's gone sixth in the Premier League charts with 178 Premier League goals. This fella's doing it week in, week out, year in, year out. Rashford had one good year and he took on Boris Johnson and got a load of dinners and everybody was going mad for him. So he has serious problems. And Man United, in terms of the mismanagement, to offer him the contract that they gave him and the money that was spent on him, and now he turns his back on him and goes to Aston Villa. So I'd have no time for him whatsoever, Marie.
Stephen, he said his dream move was Barcelona, so he's going to be happy with Birmingham, is he?
slight contrast. Listen, don't knock the Midlands, it's not that bad. Some nice spots, but no, it's no Barcelona. And it's funny, I was looking at the picture of Rashford, I thought, he looks like he's put on a bit of timber. I don't know whether he's not been training hard, but I don't think he looks like the physical specimen I would have expected for that he has been and when he's at his best. I expect him to go into Villa, and the way they play, it could suit his game. They play high lines, they play with loads of even teams even spacing behind, quite direct. And if he does get going, listen, like Alan said, if you can't get yourself up and find Manchester United, your boyhood club, like a team that you want to represent, like everybody dreams of representing the team they support. And that's he was there. He had it all. He's on 300-something thousand pound a week. Like it's ridiculous to think that he can't find a way just to play, regardless of who the manager is. Representing that club alone, the manager should be irrelevant. It's so disappointing to see where he is now.
Yeah, £350,000 a week. It's absolutely mad. But Alan, what about Manchester United and their game against Crystal Palace? So it's their fifth home defeat in six Premier League games. It's hard to believe, really. And just from Ruben Amorim's perspective, Al, how damaging was that defeat?
I think very damaging, but it didn't surprise me, Marie, and that's where we're at with Manchester United now. I actually was chatting to a few lads yesterday before the game, and the one thing I said to them was Crystal Palace will beat Man United today. I really fancied them because they're on a decent run of form. Mateta has been banging in goals. Glasner is a good manager. They're a better team than Man United at the moment as well, in terms of their shape and their setup and their structure. And he's still trying to find his team, and he's chopping and changing every week. I don't think that's good as well. I don't think he has done as well as what he should have either, Marie. It's easy to point at what he's inherited, but you have to put your stamp on what you inherited as well. And he's chopping and changing week after week. I watched him against Fulham last week. It was the worst game of football I've ever seen. It was horrendous, and they got away with a victory. I watched him against Rangers, two bad teams, two desperate teams in the Europa League. So United are
don't
so
hold
poor.
Back.
Thank Holiday Allen.
They're so poor. Cheery. They're so poor, Marie. But I wasn't surprised by the result. Crystal Palace are a very good team, and they're well managed, they're well coached. They've some very good players, Merteta, Eze. They've better players than Man United as well. So I wasn't one bit surprised. Sorry, Marie.
I'm a United fan, Alan.
So am I, Austin. I actually agree with Alan.
I know, that's the sad thing. That's what hurts so much.
They're just one for the world. But what about Forest? Get stuffed 5-0 last week, Stephen. Come back this week and win 7-0. That's picking yourself up off the floor.
It is. Oh, they're absolutely flying. Like, Chris Wood is having talk about Indian summer, having a time of his life, just right place, right time, everything's falling around them, the way they play, it's energetic. Gibbs White has been brilliant for them. I whether they can maintain it, which is always a question, and we said this about Leicester, I don't think Forest are going to, but they may grab that Champions League spot, but to come back 7-0, sensational performance against Brighton, who I don't know what's happened with Brighton. They look like, you feel like Brighton are going to go on a run and then they drop off. And it's a wonderful win to put 7 past them. Absolutely brilliant. And they look so dangerous. They could have hit more as well.
I think they will get the Champions League spot. They're 6 points ahead of Man City. Man City, major problems. The one team I would worry there, maybe potentially Newcastle, but Chelsea have fallen off a little bit. City as well. I think Forest have a great chance, and I know the Ruby story he keeps telling me every week, but they are brilliant. And Morgan Gibbs-White is serious talent.
He is. I look, Bournemouth as well. I thought they were unlucky. Clivert, a shocking miss to make it 1-1 at the weekend, and Salah was magic. But to me, Bournemouth and Forest are just showing bigger clubs like United, Spurs, that actually it can be done. So what the hell are you doing?
Good coaching, Ruby.
As
you say, Iriola's a brilliant coach. Nuno's doing very well. But also lads with attitude and hungry and playing for the badge and playing for, I suppose, themselves as well, and showing a bit of pride in their professional performance. And that should be a given for every one of them. But sometimes I think, I don't want to end on Rashford, but spoilt, overpaid, overhyped. Whereas you have good lads, hungry lads with a good attitude, the difference is night and day.
Yeah, it's just very hard to get rid of them though when you have them, because they've such big wages and fees attached to them that you end up getting stuck with them, and it's very hard to clean out these
Alex
dressing
Ferguson
rooms.
Alex Ferguson would have got rid of them.
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
Attitude determines altitude.
Okay, lads, that is it. That's a good one. Write that one down. I'm glad we didn't let you go. Austin, Alan, thank you so much for coming in. Stephen Kelly as well. Thanks for all of that. Lots to go through from the weekend and lots more to look forward to as well, because myself and Ruby are going to be back tomorrow. We'll be talking a little bit more racing. There's European football, and we haven't even mentioned the hurling. So that's it from us for today.